Welcome to Biz Rocker Radio. This is John Baker, and we are here once again. We are having an amazing fall here in Atlanta. It's a perfect 75 degrees today and low humidity. We are excited about the day and certainly about the show. Biz Rocker Radio is an opportunity to chat with individuals that are business owners, executives, individuals that are thought leaders in the Atlanta area. And today we have a guest with us who's a recent author and working on her second book, we found out in the break here. Susan Willis Updegraff is with us. And Susan, I want to welcome you in.
Thank you very much.
So Susan, you wrote a book and you're starting to work on your second one. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your background and kind of how you got to where you are now.
Sure. I was born in Atlanta in the late 1940s, really long time ago, at Crawford Long Hospital, which is now known as Emory Midtown, which you may know. My parents took me home to the suburbs off of 14th Street, and if you are from Atlanta and know anything about it, you know how funny that is. I actually grew up in Sandy Springs, though, and Sandy Springs now is a very large metropolitan suburb of Atlanta, but back then, it had a four-way stop at the intersection of Mount Vernon Highway and Roswell Road, and that was about it, except for a little grocery store, an elementary school, and three churches,
right,
which is hard to believe now. We were actually very far from affluent, our family. The house that we lived in was a rented house that had been a farmhouse, had been a chicken farm. And it was on Allen Road, which actually is real close to I-285 now, but 285 was not there at that point. We were from, my mother was from Roswell, and my father was from Forsyth, Georgia. And the chicken coops actually in the back of the house were still there, as well as the barn when
right.
We were there. Most of my friends, however, in Sandy Springs, which if you know something about it, you know that there's fairly affluent area. Most of my friends were far more affluent than we were, but I grew up very close to my family. That included aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents and great-grandparents. My mother's family is from Roswell, going back to the mid-1700s. I have family members, or ancestors, in all the old cemeteries there in Roswell. My father's family is from Monroe County in Forsyth, and we go back that far as well there. So I am Southern all the way through.
All the way through. You can't get away from that.
Can't get away from that. From Georgia, of course. And I didn't think anything about it when I was growing up. I thought everybody did those kinds of things. But some of the characters in my book wound up being blends of some of my family members. And you'll see the thread of Southern culture running very, very strong through the book.
And what inspired you to write the book? How did you decide, hey, this is something that I want to do?
Well, it was really based on experiences in my life growing up. I had somewhat of a difficult childhood in many ways. Without getting into too many details about it, the writing of the book wound up being a cathartic experience for me. It was something that I needed to do to help myself as much as anything to grow out of some of the difficulties that I grew up with. And you'll be able to tell in the book what some of that was. But dealing with these things as a child and a teenager, it was difficult. What happened, basically, is while I was writing the book, when I got about halfway through the book, or maybe a little bit less than that, it was like a movie had gone off in my head. And the words just flowed out of my head and onto the paper. And that was the first time that I realized that maybe I could write this novel and maybe I could write something else. And that's what's happening with my second book. It's just sort of flowing off the out of my head and onto the paper. It's been very interesting.
You know, it's interesting. Before we got on air, you were talking a little bit about, you know, the times that you kind of started writing the book and then you'd stop and you'd restart again. And mm-hmm. Did you find that that doing it the first or the second time seemed to be easier or the words came to you more simplistically?
Well, the second time, after I had time to think about it, I actually started it and had several chapters and then just threw them all out and started over again. I think sometimes when you do something like that and you allow it to sit for a little bit, you go back and reread it instead of being so tied up into it, you take a break from it and then reread it. I think you see good changes that need to be made.
Yeah. And give us the title of the book.
It's called A Season for Living. And I didn't get the title of the book until I was probably a little bit more than halfway through the book. And the title came from an event that happened in the book, and it actually came from Ecclesiastes 3. And if you know what that is, you probably do if I say it. It's to everything there is a season, a right. time to be born and a time to die, and all of that. Well, the last of that particular chapter says, and I'm paraphrasing here, it's not perfect, nothing is better for man under the sun than to eat, drink, and enjoy the days of his life. It's a gift from God. And one of the characters in the book had just totally forgotten to live her life. And at her grandmother's funeral, she realized, when she heard these verses, that her grandmother was reaching across from death to tell her granddaughter to live.
Right.
And that's how it came about.
So I'm curious. Many of our listeners are business owners, executives that have thought of writing books. I think a lot of people think of writing books. Mm-hmm. How long had you thought about doing something like this?
Oh, my goodness. Well, if I tell you the length of time, it's kind of crazy, but probably 20 years, yeah. actually, I had sort of thought of it. But to really sit down and get started, it was probably about a year, maybe, that I started really, really thinking that I was going to do it. And then one day I just sat down and I said, I'm doing this.
What happened that day? Do you remember?
Just needing to write things down. You know how you can, things happen throughout our lives that are a catalyst for other things to happen. And I don't remember specifically what could have happened, but one of the things that I've done now since my children are grown is I have decided that it's okay to do things for myself. And so this has been one of those things where I could sit down and write, and I did it for myself.
What did you find the most challenging part of that process and that experience?
Well, for me, and I mentioned this to you before, I'm a very linear thinker.
Right.
And so a lot of times, I wanted a lot of the history in the book to be real, and it is. And so I did a lot of research. I ordered books. I looked things up on the internet. So the history in the book is actually real Atlanta and Georgia history, which was important to me to do that. But I think probably the most difficult thing is when I get to a place where I want to know something, I want to do something, I will stop and research that, and I won't go forward with the writing until I have completed that. So I get stuck sometimes trying to get exactly the right answer, the right thing that I want to write.
So no writer's block, research block is what you
research
get.
Research block, exactly. Good way to put that.
I like that. I coined that phrase. Andy, you got that? I'm going to coin that phrase.
All right, yeah, I'll write
get
that down.
Write that down?
Yeah.
Make sure you put that into some sort of legal thing.
Yeah, let's get a patent attorney on the
patent,
next show.
That's what
there
I
we
wanted.
Go.
Yep. All right, so what did you find? So that's the most challenging piece of it. What did you find rewarding? What was the most rewarding part about finishing it and publishing it and getting it out there?
Believing that I actually could help somebody. I believe that all of us have gifts, and we need to use our gifts to help people, not only people that we care about, but people that we don't even know. And I believe that this story showcases how tragedy and sadness can be turned into triumph, and it can actually turn into people helping one another, people learning to help each other within a family, and then help people that you don't even know.
Did you in your research and the experience just in reading, was there anybody who you really like to emulate, or a writing style that you like to follow?
What I found when I was writing, because I have a great love for interior design, And so my descriptions in the book are fairly detailed. And in fact, the first person that did the edit for me said that there needed to be action inside some of the descriptions because people would get lost in the description. And they were right, of course. But Pat Conroy is one of those people. I read, while I was writing this book, I read South Abroad. And that was a very interesting book. I actually got some affirmation from him in the descriptions because my book is descriptive, but not nearly as descriptive as his book. So that was kind of good for me to see that. And Ann Rivers Siddons writes a lot of novels about the South, about Atlanta, different things like that. So she was an inspiration. And then, of course, Catherine Sockett wrote The Help. And I read that book while I was writing my book. And my book actually showcases the opposite, the exact opposite South that her book showcases. In my life and in my experiences, we did not treat people who worked for us badly. They became like family members to us. And this book, my book, will show you how that happened. And the people who worked for this family really, really were the same as family to them, and they loved them. They loved each other.
When you finished writing the book, a lot of times I've spoken with authors, and the most difficult part is, well, now what do I do? Do I self-publish? Do I go to a company to help me publish and get the marketing and the kind of sales behind me? How did you go through that process?
Well, research, again. I did a lot of research online about self-publishing. I realized fairly quickly that because I was an unknown author, that it was highly unlikely that I was going to get a major publishing company to take a look at what I had done. So I chose iUniverse to be my publisher. iUniverse used to be the publishing arm for Barnes & Noble. And Barnes & Noble sold them to a company called Author House some years ago. But because of that, I thought that would be a good place to start. Actually, the first thing I did is I got my own copyright. So I've been in banking too many years right. to absolutely trust anybody
right.
for anything.
Yeah.
So I did my own copyright. And then I sent it to iUniverse to publish. And the first edit came back, and it was pretty scathing. And so I had to drop back and lick my little wounds and go back. And then what happened is I thought I had made all the changes that I needed to make and all of that. But one of the things that they offer there is a comprehensive copy edit. And so I said, you have come this far. You might as well go do it. It was not inexpensive at all. And I said, just do it. So I did it, and it was worth every penny to do that.
So you self-published.
I did.
And do you have it electronic version, or is it hard copy version?
All of the above.
All of the above.
You can get it online at Amazon. You can get it online at Barnes & Noble, or you can get it online at iUniverse, and it's available on Nook and Kindle as well.
It's so interesting. How many more people that want to write a book actually do it nowadays because of these areas that you can disseminate this information? I mean, when could you have gone to Barnes & Noble and said, look, I'm on Barnes & Noble, or I'm on Amazon, or I'm on these places where anybody anywhere in the world could actually order it? You'd have to go to a bookstore or a place that had major distribution. Have you found that as being a big encouragement to you in actually getting the book written and published?
Well, it was an encouragement that they did all the heavy lifting, the publisher did, as far as getting everything set up and out. My book is right now in an area called print on demand. And the bookstores can carry my book if they want to. Atlanta bookstores probably really would benefit from carrying it because it's an Atlanta story. But I had to pay extra to the publisher for the book to be returnable. oddly enough. But that's one of the things that caveat that has to go with that in order for the book to be carried by bookstores. And I have done a book signing at Barnes & Noble, and then I had a private book signing, and that's been really rewarding as well.
Now, is that part of the, kind of the marketing, that what you've done to kind of get the book out? I mean,
that's
obviously
right.
Something like this, radio shows and stuff. What else have you done that you found to be successful in promoting the book?
Social media.
Really?
Facebook. A lot of Facebook. In fact, I have gotten a tremendous amount of encouragement and feedback from people that I know and people that I don't know. On Amazon and on Barnes & Noble, there are reviews of the book there. And I know about two of the people on there that did reviews, and I don't know who the other ones are. But I got 5-star reviews, so that was very, very encouraging for me.
What kind of advice would you give to other people, other authors that may be looking at starting the process of writing a book? What would you do, have them do that maybe you maybe didn't do the first time around?
Or what took me so long to get started?
I guess 20 years is a long time.
A long time. Just do it. Just sit down and do it. Don't think that you can't do it. Don't sell yourself short. An interesting thing is my husband is extremely bright, and he reads a lot. And when I was writing the book, he would say, "When are you going to let me read it?" And I said, "Never." Never? You can't read it?
You can't even buy it. You're not even going to buy it?
No. Get away from me. And so finally, when I was a little over halfway done with the book, I said, "All right, then. You can read it." So I sent it to him, and he read it. And he read about 17 chapters. And I said, "Well..." And he said, "I didn't know you had it in you."
Wow.
And so that was the biggest compliment
that's
I could
right.
have gotten.
Best day of your life.
Exactly.
That's great. And you said you have kids, right?
Yes. My husband and I actually have 5 children between the two of us. Three mm-hmm. of them are my daughters. They are all adults. And we have 6 grandchildren between the two of us, and that would be 5 girls and 1 boy.
All right.
And they range in age from 19 to 7 months.
Wow.
So, a lot of fun.
A broad swath of kids, huh?
Yes, they are. And girls, oh gosh, yeah. Bunch of girls.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like you already started with all the, you got 4 and 1, right?
That's right, I do. Yeah.
So, what kind of help can family give in this type of a process? I mean, if my wife is looking at writing a book, has been looking at writing a book, kind of maybe not in the 20 years that you took, but, you know, keep starting and stopping and kind of doing some different things. What can family do to help that process?
I think an encouragement to start, and then allowing that person the time to themselves. Allowing that person time to, because you have to get in the zone to write. If you're gonna do that, you have to. It's like almost like praying or meditating or something. Because you go to where you are writing. You go to that place and you see everything as it happens. It was like a movie was pouring onto the pages from my head, And so you have to be able to get into that without a lot of distractions. And
great.
So encouraging time to be able to do that is probably the best thing.
So without giving away the story, maybe a little bit more on what the book's about. And then I'd love to hear a little bit more also about the second book that you're thinking about writing.
Okay. The first book starts in the late 40s. And one of the main characters, Charlotte, has married a man. She was 32 when they got married, and that was unheard of back in the 40s. And at 35, she was expecting her first baby. Well, she grew up in Roswell, and she didn't grow up wealthy at all, but she married a man who's worked for his father, and they were extraordinarily wealthy. So she got thrust into a completely unfamiliar territory. Along those lines. So she had a daughter. So she and her daughter then become the two main characters. And the way my book is different from The Help is that Charlotte's nanny, when she was growing up, was a black lady who had lived with them in Roswell. And so she insisted that Belle come and live with her and her husband. And so they lived there at the house, and Belle loved Charlotte, and she loved her. So Belle took care of everything in the house as far as, you know, all the goings-on of the gardener and all of that. And another way that family got brought in is that Belle had a nephew who was really on the wrong path. He was about 17. He'd already been in trouble. His father had been arrested a couple of times just for trying to have lunch at a counter at Woolworth's downtown. And so she knew, and in the late 40s, he was going to be in the same trouble. So she brought him to be the butler at the house. And the way the story plays out, the love and the caring between Belle and her nephew and this family that's one of my favorite parts, is how they cared for each other.
And the second book, is it a kind of an extension of the first story?
It actually begins, it picks up where the other book left off, because so many people called me and said, oh my gosh, I'm not done with this family. When's the next book coming out? And I went, oh gosh, I just got done with this one. So I'm 28 chapters into the second book. What you see here is some of the original characters, but then there are introduction of new characters, mainly in the form of the adult children of the girl who was born when the book opens. Mm. And so you see one day, in one chapter, you'll be in Atlanta. In another chapter, you'll be in Washington, D.C. In another chapter, you'll be in Durham on the campus at Duke University. In another chapter, you'll be on the campaign trail with a very famous state senator. And it's pretty different than the other book because it actually comes into more contemporary life.
Yeah, I would imagine that gets into the 70s or 80s?
Actually, the original book goes from the late 40s to the year 2000.
Oh, really?
Yes, but the second book picks up at the year 2000. I'll tell you what was challenging in the first book. If you think about it, people didn't have technology, of course, back then for communication. Most people had one telephone in the middle of the house. So I had to remember that people couldn't communicate with one another very easily while I was writing the book, and all that didn't come in until much later. So this second book is easier because people can pick up their cell phones in that book.
That's right. Or email.
That's right. Email exactly.
And then social media probably comes into the end of the book.
Correct. Correct.
Well, it's great having you with us. You know, one of the last questions we always like to ask, Susan, is it's kind of a pearl of wisdom. What would you give as a pearl of wisdom to our listeners?
Well, I tell you, there's a couple of things that I thought about. And the first thing that comes to my mind, and you will see this in my book, is I believe that love is the strongest thing in the universe. Love binds us here on earth. It binds us together even after we are gone. It is the essence of us that is God, that is love. And I think the second thing, over the years, I've been in banking for over 40 years. And in recent years, I've been very lucky to work in private banking and work with very wealthy and affluent people. Some of the finest people I have ever known in my life. Some of the most wonderful people. But what I have learned from them is that money does not make you happy. Money does not solve your problems. Money does one thing. It gives you choices. And that's really about it.
So money's giving you choices, and make sure that you keep your heart in the right place.
That's right. Exactly.
Well, we appreciate the time you spent with us this morning.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you for the opportunity.
My pleasure. And to our listeners, we appreciate your time as well. Until next week, be safe.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation.